The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Trump's first criminal trial is now firmly underway after opening statements from the prosecution and defence and the first witness, with the unfortunate name of Pecker, beginning his testimony. Now, Donald Trump, who's 77, has been charged with 34 counts of fraud related to hush money that was paid to adult film actress Stormy Daniels before the 2016 election. He has pleaded not guilty, arguing the allegations he faces are not criminal. Larry Donnelly, who's a law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with the journal.ie, joins us now. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, he was railing about the fact that he should have been on the campaign trail while instead he's in a New York courtroom, which I suppose for those of us who've been following it, it seems bizarre since he was the one who delayed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he tried every tactic in the book. And yeah, he railed afterwards, but reportedly during the proceedings, which were quite brief, actually, he was very quiet and very stoic and wasn't his usual bombastic self. One wonders. And again, today is going to start off with a hearing out of earshot of the jury on whether Donald Trump has violated the gag order imposed by the judge that forbids him to, attack witnesses, jurors, prosecutors, court staff, families, etc., something that he's made a sport of, and we'll see how that turns out today.
Mm. Now, the prosecution outlined its case as sort of a roadmap of where they're going, and then the defense responded. What did we learn from both?
Well, I think the prosecution, you know, they're saying, look, this is a criminal conspiracy and a cover up that they're going to fully document, that they have documentation around all of this. The defense side, you know, really is focusing in on the credibility of Michael Cohen. They're saying, look, this is about 34 pieces of paper. And then they're applying, look, it's about $130,000. It's relatively small potatoes in the grand scheme of things. Indeed, Todd Blanch, one of Trump's lawyers, said, look, we're all New Yorkers here. Let's use a little bit of common sense. And I think he's implying there that, look, if Donald Trump were not running for president of the United States, there is not a chance that this prosecution would be being put forward. And at that front, I would tend to agree with Trump's defense team.
But isn't that the issue, that no matter who you are and you're paying hush money to keep, maybe something from your business associates or your spouse or whatever, and that may be reprehensible, but it may not be illegal. If Donald Trump was not running for election, it kind of wouldn't be relevant. But when you've got someone who's determined to keep relevant facts from the electorate, that's a different matter entirely.
Yeah, and I think that's what the prosecution is going to try to communicate. But on the law, the prosecution, the jury's going to have to make a couple of leaps for the prosecution. They're going to have to buy into the idea that when Trump was paying this money, he wasn't just paying for it to go away or paying for it to keep it out of his family's earshot, to keep it quiet. They're going to have to establish that Trump was specifically intending to violate campaign finance law. Then there is the other question, which is still unresolved in American law, as to whether hush money payments actually constitute a violation of campaign finance law. The only thing approaching a precedent we have on this front is with respect to John Edwards, the former Democratic presidential candidate, whose friends and allies paid some $900,000 on his behalf to keep word of an affair and a pregnancy that resulted from the affair away from the electorate in years ago. And the jury in that instance acquitted Edwards very, very swiftly. There is also, Pat, in my view here, a couple of interrelated questions. One with respect to the statute of limitations. I mean, again, this goes back to 2016, 2017. Here we are in 2024. And to my knowledge, this hasn't really been fully ventilated. And that kind of surprises me, but I suspect it may be. And there is also the question of, you know, look, this is an allegation of a federal campaign finance violation being brought by a state prosecutor in a state court. Now, none of these individually, I suppose, are fatal to the prosecution, but all of them combine to render this less than a strong case, in my view. But what the prosecution has going for it undoubtedly, is the reality that Donald Trump is deeply unpopular in Manhattan. And this jury may have passed the smell test, but I can't imagine that there aren't a number of them who have negative views of Donald Trump. And to what effect that will come in the deliberations will be fascinating to hear.
However, all Donald Trump needs is one dissenting voice, and he's acquitted. So you wonder whether or not his concern is not with the verdict, because it would appear that even if he's a convicted felon on the basis of this, that his diehard support will not waver in that support. But it's more what might unfold in the evidence that would perhaps discredit Donald Trump more.
Yeah, I think, you know, there could be a lot of salacious detail here. I think in particular, if Stormy Daniels takes the stand, I think that could be hugely embarrassing, indeed humiliating. And as you say, you know, the Trump diehards aren't going anywhere. They're going to stand by him no matter what. But as we've discussed before, this election is going to be decided by a relatively small cadre of voters in a handful of states. And the impression that that could create could be very damaging to the president. And there is also polling from earlier in the year that although a lot of Republicans say that, look, this is going to roll off him like water off a duck's back, and I'm inclined to agree with that. But there is still polling in the wake of the Iowa and New Hampshire contests earlier this year, where a number of Republicans said, look, if he's convicted of anything, we're going to be reticent to support him. And again, coming back to who's going to decide this election, if even a small number were dissuaded by a conviction here, that could be fatal to Donald Trump's chances. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that Senator Mitt Romney, who is not going to run again, he said, I think people have processed the fact that Donald Trump paid a porn star and committed adultery and misreported that on his tax forms. I think people assume that's the case and it's not going to move the needle. And that's Mitt Romney, who will not be voting for Donald Trump.
I think that's right, Pat. And to be frank, you know, and again, as somebody who, like Mitt Romney, is no fan of Donald Trump, you know, I really think that this case is not all that strong. I think that's what it boils down to. He paid off, or through his fixer Michael Cohen, paid off a porn star, and then filed false business returns, saying that these were payment for legal services, and that's what this case amounts to, not the grand conspiracy being alleged. And I think that, you know, in that context, that's why I think this case should not have been brought, and it highlights a major systemic failing in the United States. It is crazy, objectively, that we elect prosecutors to administer justice in the United States. And this prosecutor campaigned on a pledge that he would get Donald Trump. And that should be disconcerting to anybody, no matter how they feel about Donald Trump.
Mm. Now, legal experts maintain that 80% of jurors' minds are made up at the end of the opening statements. So, who did best yesterday?
I have to say, and again, I reiterate that I don't think the prosecution's case is strong. I thought the prosecution was actually quite strong based on what I've read. And again, regrettably, I think at one level, this case is not being televised, so we can't see and hear and watch all of it. But based on what I heard, the prosecution put forward a relatively strong argument under the circumstances, you know, and this idea that, look, this is a conspiracy. We're going to need you to follow along with this very carefully. But if you follow the documents, you follow everything we have here, there is a case to be made. And again, in the context, I think that that's probably as strong as they could have put it. You know, the defense saying, look, this is 34 pieces of paper. Use your common sense, focusing on Michael Cohen's credibility or lack thereof. You know, obviously, we knew that was coming. And in this context, I do wonder about Michael Cohen. This is going, I think an awful lot is going to pivot on how credibly he puts himself forward. And then on the flip side, what kind of job Donald Trump's defense team is going to do in unraveling whatever he's able to put forward.
It appears the prosecution are aware of the credibility problem with Michael Cohen, but he's vital that he's heard. But they have texts and emails and everything to corroborate what he says. So their theory is no matter what the defense do to them is that they can always say, hang on a second, this email, this text says it all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what how they couched it yesterday, I think was perfect. They didn't hide anything. They said, look, we're not putting Michael Cohen forward as, you know, someone who's a virtuous or sort of strong moral character or anything else. But he was at the heart of all of this. And the reality is that his criminality, et cetera, much of it flowed from his work at the behest and on behalf of Donald Trump. So hear him out. And if you have doubts about his credibility, wait till you see the documentary evidence we have to back it up. And again, I think that's why the prosecution, all things considered, opened pretty strongly yesterday.
Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with thejournal.ie. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.